And before I vote, I'm telling you the gospel truth, before I vote every time, I always check his website to see who he's suggesting that I vote for.
And go the opposite.
And I'll be honest with you. Most of the time, I vote exactly like the man lays it out there, because he finds those things that I don't have time to find. So never vote until you go to PrattOnTexas.com. You don't have to buy a Green Mountain Grill, but...
Yes, you do.
So we're going to do one more song, and then we're going to move on with the program. And thank you so much for coming. This is a Diamond Rio song, and I think it's more timely than when those guys released it. Your hand on his Bible when you swear to tell the truth. His name is on our greatest monuments and on our money too. And when we pledge allegiance, there's no doubt where we stand. There's no separation, we're one nation under him. In God we still trust. Here in America, he's the one we turn to every time the going gets rough. He is the source of all our strength, the one who's watching over us. Here in America, in God we still trust.
Flight. They were at baggage claim a few minutes ago when you saw me walk up here.
And now they're on their way from the airport. So they'll be here any moment. So we'll get this show started. First, I want to begin with GOP County Chairman. If you're a Republican Party County Chairman and you're here, and I know Bailey County's here because I saw it, and I know Lubbock County, if you're here, raise your hand. We want to recognize all our hardworking County Chairmen. There we go. There we go. There we go. They run the elections, run the primaries, and it's a lot of work, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Republican elected officials, anybody that has an R by your name, or you serve in a nonpartisan office, but you're clearly a Republican, if you are an elected office holder, let's raise your hand today. See who all's here. I know there are a bunch of them here. I saw Dan Seal with the water board. Look, if you live in Lubbock County, you're going to go vote, and you're going to see this thing called the High Plains Underground Water District. You're going to go, what the hell's that about? It's real simple. Only one of them ended up with an opponent. The most conservative, best member of the board got the opponent, some tech professor, okay? Dan Seal is a solid Republican and deserves to be returned to office in the High Plains Underground Water District. How many people in this room today are absolutely going to turn out to vote and take your friends, associates, and families with you? Ladies and gentlemen, it's easy to get caught up in all the panic, but let me explain something to you. This is a gubernatorial cycle election. All of us who do elections, that's what we call it. The national media calls it a midterm because to them states don't exist, thus there is nothing about gubernatorial. The turnout, this is all about turnout. So it's great that you're going to go, but we can lose this election, ladies and gentlemen. We could lose it, but only if you do not take your friends, family, associates, and people you can wrangle to the polls and ask them to vote in favor of America and our Constitution. Now, this morning, it's this afternoon now. Some of you got here this morning. Glad you're here. Glad you're patient. Senator's on his way. We're about to begin our formalities with the prayer. If we can get Mary Constancio ready to go up here. And also, there's Chairman Evans there for the pledges. Mary, come on up here. Before we get to our prayers, I want to just say good Saturday afternoon to all of you. And it is, as always, what? That's right, we're today again, a great day to be a Texan. It is, as always, a great day to be a Texan. Let's do it one more time, even a little louder. It is, as always,
a great day to be a Texan.
And on that note, it's a great day to be a Christian and a follower of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
It is an honor and
privilege
to be with you today, and today we give all the glory to God. We especially thank God for Ted Cruz for everything that he's been all these years. And let's bow our heads and we call on the Almighty Father, Father of us all. We thank you for this day. We thank you that we are here. We thank you that we woke up this morning, that we are able to vote. That we are able to say, Lord, to you be the glory. And Lord, keep our state safe. Keep it safe, Lord. Keep us always moving forward towards you. Lord Jesus, I just pray upon all these children of yours here today. May they all continue to be kind servants of you. May they know, Lord, direct them, and that we may also direct others in knowing what is right for us and for you and for our country. We thank you, Lord, and we just pray right now when we join voices that this state, especially right now, may just stay, and that Senator Cruz may still be senator for our state. And Lord, we join voices in this. Through Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Mary. All right. Mary Constancio, ladies and gentlemen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, he assembles, sells, puts in cotton gins all around the world. If you live in West Texas, you know that that's the basis of our life here. We wouldn't be here without it. And more importantly, he's a proud I'm Texas guest host. But most importantly, He's your Lubbock County Republican Party Chairman. Welcome, Mr. Steve Evans.
Thank you, Robert. Ladies and gentlemen, if you can get on your feet, let's stand up. We'll show that other campaign across campus, across town, that we stand and honor our flag, Red Raiders and friends. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's get those Texas flags in the air. Let's keep them up there. Those of you that hang out around the Lubbock County Republican Party, we're doing short on time. Oh, you got them. Pratt's got the cufflinks. Yeah. We pledge the Texas pledge. You can do two things. You can put your hand on your heart and keep it there. You can do it the way we do, the old way. Hold your hand out. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible. Thank you. Let's keep those flags going today for the press, for the senator. Thank you for coming.
Ladies and gentlemen, did you watch the debate last night? You're in trouble with me because the first half was on during my show. No, if you watch the second half, good. Did you notice that Mr. Beto Pancho O'Rourke, and ask Frank Gutierrez if Pancho is a put-down, it is not. He says, call me Pancho, that's my name, Francisco. That Beto Pancho last night was pressed on whether he endorsed and backed the policies of Hillary Clinton. He did not want to answer that question. In fact, my understanding is, and as I promised you on the air, I didn't watch the debate, but I read the follow-ups this morning. He said it was irrelevant that he backed Hillary Clinton. Lubbock, Texas, is it irrelevant to you if your next U.S. Senator is a follower of Hillary Clinton and the Clinton crime family?
No!
What do you think about bragging around Texas that your rating from the 6 million members of the National Rifle Association is a failing F, and bragging about that as a rating? Would you rather have a senator as an A or an F? Tell me which letter.
A!
Next question. If you are one of these ignoramuses, which you're not because you're here, who show up in every poll thinking that Robert Francis O'Rourke, the son of a county judge in a pretty wealthy family in El Paso, Texas, who went to the Ivy League in Columbia University, came back, made a lot of money in El Paso through his position on the city council in part. If they think in the polls, they say, but he's fresh, he's new, he's not a traditional politician. But Ted Cruz, he's an insider politician. Which member of those people has been an elected politician longer? Ted Cruz or Robert Francis O'Rourke? That's right. Ted Cruz is just finishing his term, his first term as a United States Senator. Robert Francis O'Rourke was elected during the Obama years to the U.S. Congress. He's a sitting member of the swamp, ladies and gentlemen. He is plugged into the swamp as deeply as you can be plugged into the swamp. And all you have to do, and you don't have to go talk to the Young Republicans Club or anybody in El Paso County. I helped found that club. I know those people. They're a little bitty minority, okay? You don't have to go talk to them. All you've got to do is go look at the media coverage and the Democrat activist who blogged and who did online work and who worked in the media in El Paso when Robert Francis O'Rourke was elected as city representative, as they call him, and it's a political job there. They get money, they have staffs, it's an amazing deal. When he was there, he took vote after vote after vote to enrich himself and his father-in-law's companies. The Democrats put that up. When he ran against Sylvester Reyes, the former Democrat congressman from El Paso, who was the former head of the Border Patrol, so you can get why Beto didn't like him. He was a former head of border enforcement in the El Paso region. Fellow Democrat, liberal, but we got to take him out. We can't enforce the border, can we? When he ran against it, it was in TV ads. Nobody cared. Powerful family in El Paso. When Beto Pancho drove drunk, he didn't just get pulled over for weaving. No, he crashed into a vehicle and turned up in opposite traffic head on, and people were could have been killed. And he tried to flee the scene, according to the police reports, and a witness kept him there. When he said he jumped the fence at University of Texas, El Paso. Funny, the arrest record, I believe, was for burglary. But he got out of both of those things after about a year of the wheels of justice not turning because his father's a former county judge in El Paso. His mother ran a big store up on Mesa Avenue. That, by the way, didn't pay its taxes and had a huge thing with the comptroller's office. The point I'm making to you is before Ted Cruz was ever a political office holder or a candidate for political office, Beto O'Rourke was already training full-time in the ways of the swamp in Washington, D.C., and when he went there with his legs running because he already knew how to play the game because he learned it in the Democrat corrupt stronghold of El Paso, Texas. Do we want that man as our next U.S. Senator from the state of Texas? Or do we want someone who has spent his time, ladies and gentlemen, backing the United States Constitution, suing an out-of-control federal government for encroaching upon the sovereignty of the greatest state, and that is Texas, as our Solicitor General, a man who has dedicated his life to conservative principles, and I don't just mean in politics, but I mean in the way we live our lives, and a father who preaches the gospel of Jesus Christ around this state. Is that the kind of person we want as our next senator from the great state of Texas?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this election is not a blowout for Republicans. I've got an advantage over a lot of you here, you young folks, who have known nothing but Republican blowouts. When I came to Lubbock, Texas, and worked on the campaign for Ronald Reagan's reelect with Ruth Shermire and everybody. We're next to First Pie Kitchens where we had the phone banks on 50th Street across from Home Depot. We were in a majority. We had one state rep who was a Republican from out here, Buzz Rocknett. That was it. Courthouse, everybody were Democrats. And then a few years we grew because we showed up like you're going to do on the election day and in early voting. We got all of that stuff put together. Then we were a balanced state for a few years. Okay? In other words, it went one way or the other way, and it depended on turnout. The worst thing that's happened to us is the best thing that's happened to us. We became so dominant it didn't matter in November. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the pendulum always swings. This election is a turnout election. Period. Turnout election. If you don't bring your friends, your family, your associates, the people who don't normally vote, we do have a chance of losing some races in this election. The opposite side is so, they're always agitated. I mean, to be a liberal, let's face it, to be a liberal is what? To be agitated and unhappy all the time. They're extremely agitated and unhappy right now. And it's not just Donald Trump. They don't like our Governor Greg Abbott. They don't like our Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. They don't like anybody. They are going to turn out people who don't normally vote. We have to find those people too. And so the people who are here, the people who care the most, you need to find people who haven't been voting, who haven't turned out in a few years, who haven't voted in 10 years. You need to take them to the polls. If we do not get them to the polls, this will be a really bad thing for the nation and for the state of Texas. Do you know that some of the people in the Democrat Party have already been saying that if Beto O'Rourke loses by less than 5 points, it's a victory for them? Now, let me just explain something to you. That's balderdash. They live in a fantasy world. Politics is winner take all. If you win by 1 point, you win. We just need to win. That's all. But it does, they do have a point. If you run a statewide race against a popular, conservative, Republican whose base loves him like Ted Cruz, and you come close, Every candidate they field won't be these backwater candidates like this gubernatorial candidate nobody even knows. They will be candidates who will have full bank accounts, full amount of money to hire all these paid volunteers. I love the left. When we volunteer, it's always volunteer. And the left, it's always somehow they're getting a paycheck for it. They will have plenty of money, and we will have something really unpleasant on our hands. This is the time. This election matters. Every election matters. The fight never ends, but this is serious. We must get out everyone we know. Now, it's not enough just for you. It's uncomfortable. But bring it up with people. Ask them about it. Find out. Have you voted? How do you feel? You know, gauge them out a little bit. Then talk to them. And if they're for the Democrats, what do you tell them? The election's in December. Or, it was on Labor Day. But if they're going to vote the way that you can advise them, take them to the polls. You got a ridiculously long early voting period. You can take people to the polls, ladies and gentlemen, and it matters. One of the things from those years ago that many people here have forgotten, Lubbock has grown a lot, but it was always, it and Midland, the two most important campaign cities outside of Dallas and Houston in all the years I started. Why? Because we were the vote in November, Lubbock and Midland, Odessa, that canceled out the heavy Democrat vote in the Rio Grande Valley. When we used to do this, Lubbock and Amarillo got heavy work in November because Texas was a Democrat state, but it was a November Republican state. What happened is the Rio Grande Valley's gone from being 500,000-600,000 people, very low voter turnout, so it's not exactly proportionate to the population. But the Rio Grande Valley has grown now. We're over 2 million people in the Rio Grande Valley now. So now it's Lubbock, Amarillo, Midland, Odessa, and Abilene that matter. And I'm not kidding you. I've done the charts. I've had the spreadsheets. Your vote turnout matters. This is not the presidential deal where it's by congressional district. This is the total vote in the state. You in this room, if you each bring 5 new people to the polls, can help us offset the vote where we know the liberals are going to do well. That's how it works. And it's always been that way. They've always depended on us. What's happened, we've become such a supermajority, it hasn't been an issue, and people haven't really had that attitude anymore. You know, there were times where we ran phone banks up here that there were only 4 other phone banks in the state. We were running them. There's people in the United because they worked in these things. They understand. This is how important your vote is. If you turn, it doesn't matter if we win for Ted Cruz 75-25 in Lubbock County. What we need is a large number of votes. Not the percentage, but a large number of votes for Ted Cruz. This is how we offset the votes from other parts of the state. Now, have any of you all been polled in this election? By phone? Not online? Anybody done the online polls? I do those YouGov polls. Okay. Have you noticed that the polls are here, here, back there, over there? You know, the reason for that is real simple, and it's why we're a little scared. There's nothing normal this election cycle. When you're doing polling and predictive work, you have to have base assumptions about who's going to turn out to vote and at what level. We don't know. They hate President Trump so much, they're so agitated, all they hear is the agitprop on the national news every night, the propaganda. That's all they know. Well, ladies and gentlemen, they don't know what the polls are. The campaigns don't know what the polls are because that poll that showed O'Rourke ahead was an assumptive poll based on some new algorithm, but I don't fault them for trying it. They're not trying to throw the poll. They're trying to guess who's going to turn out. None of the polling companies say they have any idea who's going to turn out. Will Lubbock, Texas teach them who did turn out?
Yeah.
All right. That's what we need. Everybody in West Texas to turn out. We need to show their stupid little new models that do all this weird predictive stuff are just plain stupid. And all they need to do is do what they did back in the George H.W. Bush campaign. Remember that? How did it play in Lubbock? What did it look like in Lubbock? It was all over the national papers. That's what we need to do this time, is show them that it's Lubbock, Texas that makes the difference. And by the way, it really does work that way. If our model matches the state model, they'll start polling you. Of course, that's more phone calls. Maybe you don't want that. It is a serious election, and it's not just a serious election for U.S. Senate for Ted Cruz. This is a serious election up and down the ballot. You've got local elections in Lubbock County. You've got a brand new majority going to be in place. If you turn out and vote for your Republican candidates for commissioner, you're going to have a brand new majority in place in your courthouse in Lubbock, Texas. And we hope, yeah, you can go ahead and applaud if you want to on that one. And we hope that you will have a majority of people who actually, and I believe you will, who actually listen to you, the folks in the county. And there are so many of these races that affect our lives so much more than what goes on in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is important, but your county sheriff affects your budget. You run a jail poorly, it'll bankrupt the county. I mean, in a matter of a few years. Your county sheriff has more power over your lives. Your city council, your county commissioner's court have more power over your lives than people in Washington, D.C., and yet everybody only talks about Washington. Your state legislators have far more power. You realize that there's all these crimes you hear about. Well, unless you commit them on the grounds of the federal building or in a national park or at the post office, the federal stuff doesn't apply to you. What you can go to jail for, what your neighbor can do to you and you can do back to them, and how you can sue and how you can redress the grievances, all of that happens in our state government. You're blessed with two very strong leaders in the state house from Lubbock County, John Frullo in House District 84, and of course, my good friend, whose name has just completely disappeared out of my head, whom I've known for many, many, many years from House District 83, Dustin, of whom I have a sign in my front yard. Dustin has become a real leader, ladies and gentlemen, in our caucus. Now, why are Dustin and John not here talking to you today? Because they've been in Austin for caucus, and they're on their way back, both of them. They were both planning to be here. Caucus went long. You realize that Dustin Burroughs is the guy who put forward the motion and got it passed in the GOP House caucus to get the caucus to agree to work towards electing a speaker from within the caucus. Now, that's something for a guy that was in his second term down there, ladies and gentlemen. So he has done you a great job. And I'm going to let our Senator, Charles Peary, I'll let him talk for himself in a minute whenever they're here. Ladies and gentlemen, let's ask the question one more time. It is, as always, it is, as always, a great day to be a Texan. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Texans all, I give you Senate District 28, your state senator, Charles Peary, who is a conservative Republican, to introduce to you the current and next senator from the great state, which is Texas. How y'all doing out there? It's great to have y'all show up on a Saturday. It's important that you're here. It's important that you show that our value system's alive and well. It's important that you support those candidates too. Who watched the debate last night? I will tell you, there was one line in that whole debate that sums up the whole concept of what's behind socialism versus what we know works. Thoughts and prayers are no longer working. That's what he said. That's what the opponent in this race stated. That just tells you they think they're God. They want you to humble yourself and come before the government for what you need. They think that they can provide the manna from government. That just shows the fundamental disconnect of what we believe and where they want to take this country. I was so proud of my Senator Ted Cruz that had the nerve to say, I'll pray for anything and anybody that affects this country, because he gets it. When we disconnect from our sovereign creator, and we believe that we're above and can do anything better than him, we are in trouble as a country.
Ted Cruz knows where his strength and power and authority comes from. With that, my senator, your senator-to-be, they ain't making another Texas, and there ain't going to be another USA. We got to do this one right, guys. Go out and vote for this guy come November. Thank you for being here, Senator Ted Cruz.
God bless Texas. It is fantastic. Here, y'all come on in closer to that. You're too far away, but it's the room's too big that I don't want the people in the back not to be able to see. It is great to be back in Lubbock, to be back in West Texas, to be back to the home of the Red Raiders. I'll tell you, by the way, everywhere I travel across the state, a dear friend, a man who travels with me everywhere, is Grant Murray, who played on the football team here. He was a receiver, so if anyone has a ball and wants to throw it, we'll see how good his hands are. So we had a little fun last night. We had a debate that was wild, that was raucous, and that drew a clear dividing line. And you know what? That's what politics is supposed to be about. Politics is supposed to be about choices. Politics is supposed to be about substance. It's supposed to be about ideas. It's supposed to be about policies that make a difference in the lives of Texans. And last night we saw a dramatic contrast between me and Beto O'Rourke. On just about every issue, on taxes. Look, my view on taxes are simple. We need to lower taxes, cut taxes, make taxes less. I spent thousands of hours working last year to bring Republicans together on the biggest tax cut of a generation that is benefiting Texans across the state. And Beto O'Rourke, last night, he admitted, what does he want to do? He wants to raise your taxes. He voted against the tax cut. But he's voted in favor of taxes over and over and over again. On the El Paso City Council, he raised taxes over and over and over again. He even voted for something called a rain tax. Now, I got to say, every time I've been out in El Paso, why would you tax anyone when it rains? We celebrate when it rains. taxes, he wants them higher. By the way, I thought it was interesting he invoked farmers and ranchers because he's a big fan of the death tax. I think the death tax needs to be totally repealed. Because too many farmers and ranchers, too many small business owners, when one generation passes away, find themselves in a situation of having to sell the farm or sell the ranch or sell the business and lay people off just to pay the tax man a second time. That's not fair, it's not right, but I'll tell you one of the great things about the tax cut we passed in November, we doubled the exemption from the death tax, which means 2/3 of the farms and ranches that used to be hit by it are now totally exempt. On regulations, Beto O'Rourke made clear last night, he's for more regulations. He thinks the federal government doesn't do enough to stand on the backs of small businesses. You know, when he talked about farmers and ranchers again, one of the regulations he's for is the Waters of the United States rule. A rule that the Obama EPA tried to say every drainage ditch, every puddle on your farm is now suddenly navigable waters. I gotta say, it reminds me of a line from my favorite movie, The Princess Bride. You keep on using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. And with a Republican president, what have we done? We've repealed the Waters of the United States rule. And we've also pulled out of the Paris climate deal, which would have killed thousands of jobs. Now, Beto O'Rourke is a big fan of the Paris climate deal. He's a public defender of the Paris climate deal. And I'll tell you, I spent 45 minutes on Air Force One making the case directly to President Trump. This is a bad agreement. It hurts Texas. It hurts oil and gas. It hurts jobs. It's bad for the American people. And President Trump did the right thing and pulled us out of the agreement. On Obamacare, we saw a stark difference last night. I think Obamacare has been an absolute disaster. Obamacare has hurt millions of Texans. There are many, many reasons why, but I'll tell you the biggest problem with Obamacare is it's caused premiums to skyrocket. The average family's premiums under Obamacare have gone up over $5,000 a year.
Ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. You are absolutely right. Now, what did we learn last night? We learned that Beto O'Rourke has voted not once, not twice, but 67 times to keep Obamacare. But you know what? He's not done with just keeping Obamacare. You know, Democrats nowadays, these aren't your daddy's Democrats. Look, the National Democratic Party has gone bat crap crazy. That, by the way, is a technical term. It's a medical diagnosis. Look, you look at the National Democratic Party. They're all running over to socialism. They decided just being a tax and spend crazy liberal is not enough. They want to be full-out socialists. By the way, I found it interesting. So I said last night, National Democratic Party, people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, people like Bernie Sanders are socialists. And I said, and Beto supports their policies. It's interesting, Beto's campaign said, whoa, what do you mean I'm a socialist? Well, let me explain it. It ain't real complicated. When you advocate for socialized medicine, it means the policies you're supporting are socialism. I know that sort of chain of reasoning for Democrats, for the media, I know that's complicated. But it's interesting. You know what Beto calls it? He calls it the same thing Bernie Sanders does. He calls it Medicare for all. That's kind of a soothing term. Look, Medicare is a good thing, so something good for everyone. But there are at least two problems with that. Number one, as Margaret Thatcher famously said, the problem with socialism is eventually you run out of other people's money. And you never hear from Beto O'Rourke where you're going to pay for all of this. That's not part of it. You also don't hear any response to the fact if you look at socialized medicine in every part of the world, what do you see? You see rationing. You see wait times. If you go to the United Kingdom, if you go to Canada, and you go in for a hip replacement, they say, guess what? You're going to wait. You're going to wait months and months and months. And you know what? If they decide you're too old, well, you just don't get that hip replacement. You just don't get that knee replacement. You don't get that cataract surgery. Because it's the government deciding who gets health care and what health care you get. That's not Texas.
No.
That's not who we are.
No.
And there's a second big problem with this Medicare for all idea. There are millions of seniors in Texas and across the country who depend on Medicare. Who paid into Medicare for decades, for your entire life. Now what Beto O'Rourke is saying is he wants to put every other person in the country on the Medicare, including illegal aliens as they cross the border getting their Medicare card. Including a whole lot of people who haven't paid into it. That would bankrupt Medicare. That is irresponsible.
Yeah. Amen.
Fourth area of divide last night. Guns. Here in Lubbock, we say get your guns up. I think Beto does something similar, but he uses a different finger. So we were talking about guns. And you know, Beto whipped out a story last night. He said something, I don't know, my grandpappy taught me how to shoot. Well, I don't know if he did or not, but he apparently taught you to disrespect the Second Amendment. Let me tell you something. In Texas, we believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, all of it. There was a classic moment in the debate last night where Beto said, I support the Second Amendment.
Really?
I think I literally laughed out loud. I'm like, really? When? Among other things, Beto O'Rourke enthusiastically supported Hillary Clinton. Now, records matter because Hillary Clinton made a promise to the American people. She made a promise that every Supreme Court justice she would appoint would vote to overturn Heller versus District of Columbia. Now, what's the Heller decision? The Heller decision is a landmark decision of the Supreme Court that upheld the individual right to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment. I represented Texas and 30 other states in the Heller case fighting for our Second Amendment rights. You want to know where I stand? Look at where I've stood and what I fought for. Now, Heller was 5-4. The majority opinion was authored by Justice Scalia. It's the most significant opinion Justice Scalia wrote in his 3-plus decades on the court. The position of the four dissenters, it's important to understand this. The position of the four dissenters isn't what the media wants to say, that sometimes some gun control can be allowed somewhere. Look, we can have that argument another time. That's not what the dissenters said. What the four dissenters said is the Second Amendment does not protect any individual right to keep and bear arms whatsoever. None. They said it is merely a, quote, collective right of the militia. Now, what does that mean? A collective right of the militia is fancy lawyer talk for saying no human being, no man or woman, has any right under the theory of the dissenters. The federal government or the state or local government could make it a crime, make it a felony, for any one of us to own even a single firearm, and not a one of us would have any Second Amendment right to do anything about it in court. That is a radical proposition. That is extreme. That is quite literally erasing the Second Amendment from the Bill of Rights. Hillary promised every justice she would appoint would do that. So I got another real complicated chain of logic. If you, Beto O'Rourke, supported Hillary Clinton for president, then you supported nominating justices who will repeal the Second Amendment. And that ain't Texas. Let's talk another area of disagreement. Supreme Court more broadly. Look, the Supreme Court, for every one of us who cares about all of our rights, who cares about free speech, who cares about religious liberty, who cares about the 10th Amendment right for the federal government to leave us to hell alone. It's the courts that are at the crossroads between either upholding those rights or tearing those rights down. And Beto O'Rourke wants to see left-wing judicial activists. He said that last night. He said, look, he wants people that dictate his policy outcomes, that dictate socialized medicine, that dictate every crazy policy idea that they can't actually convince the American people. Look, what the important thing to understand about the left's view of the Supreme Court is they've given up on democracy. Because they know their ideas don't sell. And so rather than actually try to convince the people of Texas that you should give up your freedoms, which is what they want, instead they just want five unelected lawyers wearing robes to decree for the whole country, we are your rulers and we're deciding. And it's important, again, to understand, look, on the other side, we're not looking for the opposite. I don't want justices to decree conservative policies. There are a lot of conservative policies I support, but the right way to get them is not for the court to demand them, but to actually win before the American people and enact them in the law through the elected legislature. We saw another divide last night on drugs. He's for them, I'm against them. You know, it used to be that wasn't that complicated. And by the way, look, it's important to understand, this is not a debate over marijuana or medical marijuana. Listen, reasonable people can differ on that. In fact, they do. We're seeing a national debate. We're seeing different states come to different conclusions on that. My view on the question of marijuana, it's a question for the states. And different states can make different decisions. The people of Colorado can make one decision, the people of Texas can make another, and under the 10th Amendment, it lets all of us decide what laws, what rules make the most sense for our communities. But this is not a debate about marijuana, which is what he tried to frame it last night. This is a debate about all drugs. Look, you got to understand, on drugs, Beto O'Rourke isn't just a guy who says, yeah, we should legalize pot. He does say that. But he wrote an entire book advocating for it. You got to understand where this ranks in terms of his order of priorities. And it wasn't just pot. All right, so the El Paso City Council. They were looking at what was happening in Juarez, one of the most dangerous cities on the face of the planet. By the way, between Juarez and El Paso, there's this little thing called a wall. And the El Paso City Council decided to pass a resolution saying that the way to help their sister city, Juarez, is to rethink the war on drugs, and in particular to have a national debate on legalizing all narcotics.
No.
Now, by the way, last night he was like, I'm just talking pot. Well, you can go read the resolution. You can go read the text of it. Read the text of the resolution. It says all narcotics. That means heroin. That means fentanyl. That means cocaine. That means crack. Now, look, I got to say, while reasonable minds may be able to differ over pot, I don't know any reasonable minds that are arguing for legalizing heroin. All right, so not only did the city council pass this resolution, by the way, this was 9 years ago. This wasn't college antics. This was 9 years ago as an elected official. He votes for it. The mayor of El Paso vetoes it. And then he comes back and argues and urges the city council and votes to override the veto. He was all in. And in fact, you can watch him. You can see the video of him saying, we ought to debate legalizing all narcotics. And I'm not saying we necessarily need to do it, but once we look at it, maybe that's what we need to do. That's not Texas. By the way, one of the legislative victories I had last year is I authored and passed legislation that allows the states to use drug testing as a condition of getting jobless benefits. For that, listen, if somebody's addicted to drugs, drugs are dangerous. There are a lot of people's families who are dealing with addiction. Addiction is an illness. Addiction can be devastating. We have every year over 70,000 deaths from drug overdoses. That's more people than die in car crashes. That is a crisis. It is destroying families in Texas and all across this country. If you have someone addicted to drugs, we should be working to help them get off their addiction, to help them get into treatment, to help them get back to work. Instead, we shouldn't just be sending them a check and facilitating and helping their addiction. We should be getting them off of that addiction and back to work. Now, in Congress, Beto O'Rourke voted against my bill. But it passed both houses of Congress anyway, and President Trump signed it into law. We saw another big difference last night on immigration. You know, there is no issue with a starker divide than immigration. On my end, I'm incredibly honored to have received the formal endorsement of the National Border Patrol Council. That is the union of the men and women who risked their lives securing the border, keeping us safe, standing up, and defending this nation. And by the way, they don't typically get involved in politics. But they made an exception in this case. The union presidents from each of the sectors along the Rio Grande, they all flew to McAllen, and they formally endorsed me because they said, out of all 100 senators, the one who is consistently leading the fight to secure the border, to build the wall, to stand with Border Patrol, is Tim. And where is Beto on immigration? He's out there. And I don't mean just a little bit. He is way out there. So let's talk specifics. Look, specifics and substance matter. All right, he's against the wall. But by the way, he's not just against the wall. He says the wall is racist. That's what he says. Apparently, is locking your front door that too? Not only that, he says we have too many fences and walls on the border right now. We need to tear down the border fences and walls we've got right now. When it comes to sanctuary cities, he's for them. When it comes to case law, he's against it. Now, I authored Kate's Law in the Senate. Kate's Law is common sense legislation that says if you have a violent criminal, an aggravated felon, and they enter the country repeatedly illegally, they should face a mandatory prison sentence, lock them up, and keep them out of our communities. Overwhelming majority of Texans support common sense policies like Kate's Law. That's the overwhelming majority of Republicans, but not just Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Libertarians, pretty much anyone except congressional Democrats that are listening to the crazy left-wing base. And you know, we talked a minute ago about how the Democratic Party is galloping to the left. Let's take an issue like abolishing ICE. So, 2-3 months ago, if I had brought up and said the Democrats are going to want to abolish ICE, our friends in the newspaper, the TV stations would have said, that's a crazy extreme attack. Nobody's talking about doing that. Well, then a funny thing happened in a congressional primary in New York State. A socialist, an avowed socialist, beat a long-term Democratic incumbent. And she won on a platform where a big part of what she campaigned on was let's abolish ICE, abolish the Immigration Customs Enforcement Agency. And suddenly all these Democrats nationally, who are getting real excited about wanting to run for president in 2020, they all said, holy cow, we got to be over there. And so somebody asked Beto, what do you think about abolishing ICE? And he said, quote, I'm open to abolishing ICE. Those are his words. When he was pressed on it, he doubled down. He said, well, maybe we shouldn't just abolish ICE. Maybe we should abolish the entire Department of Homeland Security. So listen, if you want to understand the difference between me and Beto O'Rourke, nothing is simpler than he's talking about abolishing ICE and I want to abolish the IRS. Immigration. Those views, no wall, no border security, sanctuary cities, abolishing ICE, that's not Texas. That's not who we are. Those aren't the values of Texas. Let's take another big area of disagreement last night. Law enforcement. I'll tell you right now, I am proud to stand with the men and women of law enforcement. You know, every morning police officers wake up. They kiss their wives or kiss their husbands. They kiss their kids. They walk out the door. They walk out the door, they don't know if they're going to come back. They don't know if they're going to see their spouse or their children ever again. They strap on a gun and they go into some tough neighborhoods. And every interaction they have, they get called in for a domestic violence disturbance. They pull someone over on the side of the road. They don't know if they're going to be greeted with bullets coming their direction. We rely on police officers to keep us safe. We rely on police officers to protect our families. And one of the most troubling aspects of Beto O'Rourke's record is over and over and over again, he sides against the cops. In Congress, he voted against providing body armor to sheriffs. You know, when he talks about abolishing ICE, listen, ICE are law enforcement officers that go in and they arrest drug dealers and gangs and MS-13. They risk their lives keeping us safe. And what does he talk about doing? Abolishing them. Not only that, but in the United States Congress, when that talk started to happen, a whole bunch of us introduced a resolution supporting the men and women of ICE, because it's important. Look, if you're asking someone to go in and kick down the door of an MS-13 house and risk being shot up and killed, they need to know we've got their back. So we introduced a resolution expressing support for the men and women of ICE. I co-sponsored that resolution. I enthusiastically voted for it. You know, when it went to the House, over 100 Democrats voted present. Real profile and courage. Present. Which what present meant, by the way, is, gosh, I think it's politically risky for me to be against law enforcement, but I'm too scared of my base to admit I actually support them. So present is what they voted. But 35 of the Democrats, they said, uh-uh. Present ain't left-wing enough for us. We're a no. Among those was the congressman from El Paso, Beto O'Rourke. By the way, present, Nancy Pelosi voted present. Maxine Waters voted present. But Beto O'Rourke said, uh-uh, he's further left. He is a no that he voted no to supporting the men and women of law enforcement. And I tell you, this week he gave a speech. He gave a speech which I would encourage you to watch the relevant portion of it. He gave a speech demonizing cops. And it's something we've seen over and over again. And he talks about cops searching people and shooting people solely because of their race. And he describes law enforcement, in his words, as the new Jim Crow. Let me tell you something. That is wrong. That is offensive.
Amen.
And that is not Texas.
No.
And you know what? It's cynical. That kind of language, inflaming racial tension, dividing us, smearing law enforcement, calling them racist. And by the way, when you say you're arresting and shooting people solely because of their race, there ain't nothing else you're doing but calling them racist. That is wrong, and I'll tell you, the people of Texas, we are grateful to stand with the men and women of law enforcement. In the media, let's be clear, that doesn't mean police officers never do anything wrong. Police officers are human beings. Like other human beings, there are people who do things wrong, there are people who are criminals. And you know what? If a police officer breaks the law, they'll be prosecuted. We have a criminal justice system that protects the rights of all of us, and we should enforce that system to protect the rights of all of us. But what's wrong and irresponsible is to take the next step and to slander the men and women of law enforcement the way Beto O'Rourke is doing. That's not right.
Amen.
We also had a disagreement on the national anthem.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, a couple of years ago, would anyone here have believed we were having a debate about whether you should stand for the national anthem? I mean, it was not something any of us ever imagined. And he is proud to stand and defend the NFL protesters who take a knee and refuse to protest during the national anthem. By the way, they say, no, they're not protesting the national anthem. Well, really? Well, then why are they kneeling during it? They're not kneeling during the coin flip. I don't mind. They can protest the coin flip. You can drop to your knee during the coin flip, but they're not doing that. They pick one moment, and it's the national anthem when the flag is flying. That's when they drop to their knees. And Beto O'Rourke, his comment a few weeks back, he said he could think of nothing more American than taking a knee and protesting during the national anthem. I got to say, I can think of lots of things more American. How about starting with the millions of soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines who risked their lives to defend the flag and defend our freedom? And once again, just so our friends in the media understand, everyone agrees that there's a First Amendment right to protest. But you can protest in a way that isn't disrespectful to the flag and the national anthem, that isn't disrespectful to our veterans and the men and women of law. And finally, last night we saw a disagreement. Because Beto O'Rourke is the only Democratic Senate nominee in the country to come out explicitly for impeaching President Trump. By the way, I want you to think about that. He is the only one. Elizabeth Warren hadn't come out for impeaching President Trump. Bernie Sanders hadn't come out for impeaching President Trump. You're right, I think Maxine Waters has. But she's not a Senate candidate yet. I want you to think about exactly where that puts Beto O'Rourke on the political spectrum. There's the middle, there's the left, and then there's, oh my goodness.
And then there's
an idiot. And I want you to think what impeachment would mean. So if Beto O'Rourke gets his way, next year, January of next year, we start, if Beto O'Rourke gets his way, with Speaker Nancy Pelosi launching impeachment here. For the next 2 years, we have political chaos in Washington. We have absolute Armageddon. We have a dozen investigations of every federal agency designed to cripple the entire Trump administration. Designed to end all of the positive reg reform we're seeing that is unleashing jobs, that is unleashing record low unemployment. And what happens next year if Beto O'Rourke gets his way is all of that stops. And instead, it is partisan chaos and warfare. It is Mad Max at Thunderdome.
And no Supreme Court.
No judges at all. No. Look, if it's up to Beto, judicial confirmations are done. And let me just ask one question. Is that Texas?
No!
This is a debate nationally about the direction our country goes. You know, the results we're having right now are extraordinary. We've got the lowest unemployment rate in decades. We have the lowest African-American unemployment that has ever been recorded. Wow. Think about that again.
Awesome.
We have the lowest Hispanic unemployment rate that has ever been recorded. Figures. By the way, we have the lowest Asian American unemployment that has ever been recorded. We have the lowest youth unemployment in over 52 years. And we have the lowest unemployment for women in over 70 years. last time you saw the mainstream media talking about that?
Never!
I mean, look, these are facts. These are results. We've seen, in the past 2 years, 4 million new jobs. Let's take manufacturing. Remember how during the Obama administration they'd send economists on TV and they'd say manufacturing jobs are simply structurally no longer available. We should accept it. In the last 2 years, we've seen 400,000 new manufacturing jobs in the United States. This is a debate between two approaches. Between socialism and the American free enterprise system.
Right.
Yeah.
He's American free.
Between tyranny and liberty. And this is fundamentally a debate between the crazy left wing and the great people of the state of Texas. And in that debate, I am proud, I am honored, I am thrilled to stand with the men and women of Texas. And with that, happy to answer your questions.
There's one over there.
Yes, sir.
Are you for mandatory verify?
Yes.
Thank you.
So the question was, am I for mandatory e-verify? The answer, yes. Because we need to secure the border and stop illegal immigration. By the way, you know, one of the best ways to address that, years ago, Sonny Bono, when he was a congressman, someone asked him, said, what's your view on illegal immigration? And he said, well, it's illegal, isn't it? Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Real quick. Last week, Ball High had a gun in school. Last semester, Santa Fe, high school.
Yeah.
My granddaughter started school in 3 years. What needs to be done to keep the school safe, to keep the support staff and the teachers safe? What is your...
Yeah, so thank you for that question. That's an important question. This is a time of year when kids are going back to school, and every one of us who are parents or grandparents, this is something that weighs on all of our hearts. Look, what is happening across the country is messed up. You know, when most of us were kids, this wasn't a thing. You know, when we were kids, maybe you'd go to school, you'd worry about someone giving you a black eye or bloody nose. But we didn't worry about some lunatic coming in and murdering people. And there are all sorts of factors that are driving this that have nothing to do with the laws on the book, that have things to do with, like, pulling God out of the public square, losing our faith, losing our values, losing the ties of community and family that used to keep us together. You look at these gunmen, they're often isolated, troubled teenage boys who are angry, who are dealing with mental illness, and who are cut off. There are a lot of things all of us need to be doing with the church, with our communities, to reach out and try to rebuild, to try to restitch that fabric that holds us together. But that being said, there's also a lot we can do in terms of changing the laws and changing the policies. And I think we need to do much, much more to keep our schools safer. So how do we do it? The single most important policy, I believe, is more armed police officers in the school. You know, if you look at these tragic shootings, we see the shootings where a shooter succeeds and murders kids. But there are a whole lot of incidents where someone tries to do that and the police officer is there and stops them. The best way to prevent the shooting, the number one thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy.
Amen. think it makes sense to allow teachers who are trained, who are capable, who know what they're doing, to keep the barrel. Now, this is an issue the press often caricatures, because they paint an image of little old Mrs. Smith at age 80 with a walker, the librarian, and somebody putting a 44 Magnum in her hand. By the way, I used that example out in East Texas, and in the back of the room was a Mrs. Smith with a walker who said, "I'll take it, now hit what I aim at." But nobody's talking about forcing teachers who don't feel comfortable to do this. There are a lot of teachers who were former cops, who were former military, who have training, who know how to handle a firearm, and could help make schools a safer place. I'll tell you, in Santa Fe, one of the students there, who I visited with on the day of that shooting, he was in the adjoining classroom to the art room where the shooting happened, and he said his teacher was a former Marine. And he said, "You know what? If he'd have been armed, he could have stopped this the instant it started to happen." I think there's also more we can do in terms of physical infrastructure. So, for example, shrinking the number of entrances to a school to one or two entrances. You know, if you think about it, if you go to a bank, if you go to a courthouse, if you go to most buildings, most office buildings, they usually have one or two entrances. They don't have 10, 20, 30 like a lot of schools do. In Santa Fe, the guy came in the back entrance where the annex is, shrinking the number of entrances, and in schools where it's appropriate, putting in metal detectors so that you have any potential assailant coming to where the police officers are to be able to stop them. Look, all of that together, and I'll tell you another thing that I think we need to do in terms of physical infrastructure is strengthening the doors. So that they're bulletproof and can lock from the inside. In both Parkland and in Santa Fe, students were holding the doors shut, and the gunman fired through the door. They were flimsy little doors and killed the students on the other side. That's relatively inexpensive to fix. So I think there's a lot we can do and we should be doing. I'll tell you, one of the very first pieces of legislation that I introduced in the Senate in 2013, when I was brand new up there, was legislation that, among other things, would have provided $300 million to schools to do all those things I'm talking about, to hire more police officers, to strengthen their infrastructure. I think we need to focus on making schools safer and stopping bad guys, not doing what so many Democrats do, which is going after the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens. That doesn't make us safer, but we can make our schools safer. Yes, sir. Okay, so great question. The question was, are we going to get Kavanaugh confirmed? Well, we're going to find out this week. Look, we had, a couple of weeks ago, we had a confirmation hearing. And we saw that it was a circus. We saw protesters. We saw it was all an organized, coordinated circus. First day, 70 people were arrested. By the way, they would yell out different things as they would protest. So I remember one protester stood up and yelled, "Mother Earth!" I was kind of puzzled. I said, "Well, she's not going to save you. You're still under arrest." So that whole confirmation hearing, the Democrats didn't lay a glove on Judge Kavanaugh. And so, at the last minute, they've raised these allegations. Now, several things are clear. Number one, it is clear the Democrats are playing games. This allegation sat on Dianne Feinstein's desk since July. And she did nothing with it. She had it there. She didn't ask Judge Kavanaugh when he was in her office meeting with her privately. She didn't ask him a word about it at the confirmation hearing. They had day after day after day of asking questions. She didn't say a word. But then, on the eve of the confirmation, it gets leaked to the press. Now, that being said, even though it's clear the Democrats are playing games, I still believe these allegations are serious and they need to be treated with respect. And so what I have publicly called for and what I've urged my colleagues to do is I think Dr. Ford needs to be given the opportunity to tell her story, to testify and to tell her story in a way that is respectful, to tell her story in a way that she can share with the Judiciary Committee and the American people. And then I think Judge Kavanaugh needs to be afforded the very same opportunity to defend himself. Yeah. week, I energetically made that case to my colleagues on the Judiciary Committee. They agreed with me. So as you know, the committee has invited her to testify. Her lawyers have been going back and forth with the Judiciary Committee. As far as I understand it, she has yet to agree. I hope she does. I don't know if she will.
Thursday.
Has she agreed? Oh. Look, it's dangerous if you come up here because you don't know what breaks on. Okay, if she's coming Thursday, all right, all the better. Then we'll hear her testimony. We'll hear from Judge Kavanaugh, and I think the American people can make an assessment of what happened. But what I don't think we should do is give in to the Democrats just playing games and delaying this. We need to air it out and then resolve it. Yes, sir. What do I think about abortion? It's real simple. I am pro-life. I think every human life is a gift from God. And, you know, I will say this is another issue. We didn't get to it last night, but I'm confident in the upcoming debates we will. That is a massive divide between me and Beto O'Rourke. He supports abortion in all circumstances with no restrictions. He has voted repeatedly in favor of late-term abortions. Not only that, he is the co-sponsor of legislation to have taxpayer funding to have Medicaid pay for abortions for everyone. Those are radical and extreme positions, and those don't reflect the views of the people of Texas. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I want to thank you when Mayo said that prayer and thoughts are not enough.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
A lot of people don't realize that this nation is the result of a 75-day prayer meeting. Because Ben Franklin got up in the first Constitutional Convention and called for prayer because there was such discord.
Yes.
And for the next 75 days, they had different pastors come in to the meeting, and they prayed for 2 hours before they even got to deliberation. And it finally ended after 72 days of prayer. And I thank you for bringing that out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, sir, and I think you're exactly right. This is a nation. Look, I believe in the power of prayer. Prayer can move mountains. Prayer can transform nations. Prayer can transform lives. And, you know, I will say, look, that moment, it troubled me, too, when he shot back that he didn't want thoughts and prayers. And there is a strain on the far left that ridicules, that looks down on prayer. I thought it was revealing that Beto's campaign tweeted out his line, "We don't want your thoughts and prayers." So I forget, those aren't the exact words, but it was "thoughts and prayers aren't enough," I think is what he said.
Don't cut it,
is that something like that? You know, and by the way, among the hard left, among the hard left that looks down on faith, that doesn't believe in God, that ridicules prayer, that's a popular thing to say. That gets lots of people excited on Twitter, but let me tell you, you know, life without God, life without a loving, compassionate God is a lonely, bitter, scared, unsatisfying existence. And I've spent much of my adult life standing and defending religious liberty, and I will continue to stand and defend religious liberty.
How are we going to fight terrorism in Western Africa and the Middle East? How are we going to make it better? How are we going to fight it? How are we going to get rid of it?
Look, that is a terrific question. If you look at terrorism in the Middle East, you look at terrorism in Western Africa, it is connected. Radical Islamic terrorism is a profound danger.
And I will say, one of the bits of good news, you know, I was talking earlier about the economic good news, and the economic story in Texas is remarkable, but there's another part of good news that, again, doesn't make it on the 6 o'clock news, which is what has happened in the war on terror in the last 2 years, which is ISIS has been decimated. I remember early on, I think it was about March of last year, I was talking with a senior military leader in the Army. And I was asking, you know, we were visiting, wasn't it a hearing, we're just visiting privately. And I asked him, I said, all right, how's the war against ISIS going? What do you see? And he made a prediction. He said, you know what? By this fall or the end of the year, he said, ISIS will have lost all or virtually all of its territory. And that was at the time, that was a remarkable prediction. And he said, look, they'll still be dangerous. They'll still be a terrorist organization like Al-Qaeda. They're still capable of murder, but they will have lost their nation state. They will have lost their caliphate. And I remember asking, because it was just a couple of months into the new administration, I said, well, what's changed? I mean, it's been really soon for that level of optimism. And it was fascinating what he said changed. He said, you know, it's not even that the rules of engagement have changed. He said, what has changed is the administration and the president have delegated decision-making down the command structure.
Yeah.
So he said, look, in the Obama administration, Susan Rice, the national security advisor, he said, was literally making tactical battlefield decisions, 20 troops here, 30 troops there. He said in the Pentagon, they jokingly called her General Rice. And the problem was that just slowed everything down. You had to send everything through political folks in the White House. What President Trump did when he came in is he delegated decision-making down the command structure so if our war fighters encountered the enemy, they could confront them and kill them. And as a result, ISIS lost its caliphate. What do we need to do? We need to continue to defeat our enemy, to confront them directly, and defeat them. That is the number one charge of the United States military, is to protect this nation, keep Americans safe, and we're making incredible strides and victories in doing that. All right, we'll do two more questions. Yes, ma'am.
Veteran, what can we do to help transition our active military members back to civilian life? Because 22 veterans a day commit suicide because of the hardships that PTSD and just people not understanding and realizing what happens over there. It's not just killing bad guys, it's rehoming the innocent women and children. It's helping. And how can we better that for them? Isn't that what they deserve?
Look, absolutely. Thank you for that question. Let me say thank you for your family service. And let me take the opportunity right before answering to ask everyone here who is a veteran or active duty military, please raise your hand so we can thank all of you together. Said your brother is serving, and is it your mom or your dad who?
My mom.
Your mom. I asked. I didn't.
She was a 90-pound paratrooper.
So awesome. Well, thank you for your mom's service. Thank you for your brother's service, and thank you for yours, because it's not easy when you're scared and your loved ones are over there and you don't know if they're coming back. Look, it is a huge challenge in terms of transitioning from active duty back to civilian life. That is not easy. We need to have a lot more resources. One of the things that helps is a booming economy, because for veterans, when they come out, you know, when I meet with active duty military, I try to spend a fair amount of time just sitting down with active duty military and say, Fort Hood, I had lunch, for example, with a bunch of soldiers, and just ask them, hey, what's on your mind? What are you worried about? By the way, one of the first questions I got there, this is a complete aside, but one of the soldiers there asked me, said, who's your favorite Avenger? I told her, I said, Captain America, but to be honest, I'm more of a Marvel guy, and I'd really say Wolverine. So But that's a complete aside. But it's when you meet with active duty military, that is one of the most frequent things when you ask what are they worried about. They say, look, I'm worried about when I transition out, am I going to have a job?
Right.
And when you look at the economy booming, that helps because a lot of those challenges, if a veteran can go and get a job and be working and providing for their family, it's easier to deal with those challenges. We also, on the healthcare side, look, PTSD is a serious problem. The tragedy of veteran suicides is a moral stain on all of us, that we're not doing more. I think one of the big things, look, that we need to do is significantly improve the care in the VA.
Exactly.
And I think the keys to doing that are twofold. Accountability and choice. On accountability, we passed in the last 2 years 18 different bills focused on improving the provision of service in the VA. The two most important were a bill called the VA Accountability Bill, which gives the leadership of the VA the authority to fire employees who are wrongfully denying care to veterans. That accountability is important because we were all horrified a few years ago by the scandals of the fake and bogus books that were being kept to wrongfully deny veterans the care they needed.
Against it.
There you go. These guys are paying attention. They're Texans. The second bill that I think was very important was the Veterans Choice Bill. Now, my belief, I think every veteran, it should be your right to choose your doctor. Now, as you know, there's an existing VA choice program. But it is fairly narrowly circumscribed. There are a lot of limitations in terms of when you can use it. And the Veterans Choice Bill, which passed just a couple of months ago, so it's brand new, that expanded the choice program significantly. What it did, it got rid of the 40-mile rule, it got rid of the 30-day rule. Both of those were rules that were really constricting when you can use choice. And my view, look, if you're a veteran and you want to go to the VA, you say, look, that's where I think I can get the best care. That's your right. You fought for it. You bled for it. You've earned it. But on the other hand, maybe you want to go to the local cardiologist at the hospital down the road. That ought to be your right as well. And I think the power of that is giving veterans that power of choice expands competition, and that will improve the quality of care. With mental health, one of the problems is that too many veterans needing mental health care have huge delays in the VA. We got to stop that. And so I'm going to keep fighting until every veteran has full and complete choice in health care. All right, last question.
And the depleting funds that we're having.
So it's a great question. The question was, how do I feel about the funding for arts in schools and the depleting funds? Listen, I think arts are wonderful. We are creative creatures. God created us. You know, the book of Ecclesiastes tells us there's a time for every season, a time to sing, a time to dance. All of that is who we are. I am the dad of two little girls. So on most days in our household, for my girls, it is a time to sing and a time to dance. And that's an expression of joy of the human spirit. By the way, I'll make an embarrassing admission. In high school, I was president of the drama club. Yeah, I was one of the cool kids. And have sadly not once but twice done the Sound of Music. And the really sad admission, I cannot carry a tune to save my life. I mean, it is, and I'm still friends with the woman who was then a girl in junior high, who I played Rolf and she played Liesl in The Sound of Music, and I sang, "You Are 16 Going on 17. I think I missed every single note in the song. Which is hard to do. I mean, it's actually, and she kept a smile on stage as I mangled that song and as the junior high parents winced and made it through that. So, I'm a huge supporter of the arts. Now, my views on education generally are what I would say is two things. Number one, as much as possible, the federal government should stay the heck out.
But I think education decisions should be made on the state level, or even better, the local level. Listen, the people of Lubbock know much better what the kids here need than does some bureaucrat in a windowless office in Washington, D.C. And the needs of kids in Lubbock are different than the needs of kids in New York City. And you wouldn't want New Yorkers making the rules here, and you wouldn't want Texans making the rules for them. That's the beauty of a country with 50 states. So they ought to reflect the values, the priorities. So I think the place to make that case for the arts is at the local level, at the state level. I agree with making that case, but I think it needs to be done at the local level. And secondly, when it comes to education, I'm a strong believer in school choice, in giving every child the right to access quality education, regardless of race, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of wealth, regardless of zip code. That is a powerful, powerful issue. And by the way, it's the exact same principle. We were just talking a minute ago about the VA. It's the exact same principle. The reason you do it, just like VA choices to improve the VA, school choice, one of the big things it's designed to do is improve the public schools. That competition, giving parents and kids that power to choose, competition is good. It's good in every other aspect of life. That when you empower citizens, give citizens the right to choose, that improves the quality of service for everyone. And so that's something I've been proud to fight for. And I'll continue to fight for it. Let me just make a closing observation. We're 45 days out from this election. We have a fight on our hands in the state of Texas. The extreme left, they're angry, they're energized, and many of them are filled with hatred for President Trump. That is dangerous. It's resulting in tens of millions of dollars flooding into the state of Texas. Beto O'Rourke, despite his record, far, far left, he is the number one Democratic fundraiser in the country. And he is outraising our campaign dramatically. Last quarter, our campaign raised $4.6 million. That's a lot of money. That's more than any other Republican senator in the country. $4.6 million. Same quarter, he raised $10.4 million. We are getting flooded with millions coming from all over the country. And by the way it works is every time he takes one of these far-left positions, when he talks about abolishing ICE, when he talks about impeaching President Trump, millions of dollars from Hollywood liberals and liberals all over the country flood into the state of Texas.
Where's he going to donate it when he loses?
Well, here's the good news. This is Texas. And there are a whole lot more conservatives than there are liberals in the state of Texas. So I want to ask each of you here to do four things. Number one, speak out. Use your voice. Use your voice to speak out why freedom matters, why low taxes, low regulations, lots and lots of jobs, why that matters. Why the Constitution and Bill of Rights are important. Why it's important to secure the border and keep this country safe. Why religious liberty matters. Young people, we got a lot of young people here. Everyone 30 and under, please raise your hand. Take a look around the room. You want to be inspired for the future. The future is here. For young people, use your voice. Speak out. Speak out on social media. Why does freedom matter to you? You know, liberty is powerful. It's contagious. For other young people, ask them a simple question. Why on earth would you want your life run by people in Washington? Speak out and use your voice. Number two, contribute. As I said, we're getting outraised 3-1. Every one of you, I ask when you get home today, go to our website, tedcruz.org. 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 And contribute. Make a contribution. By the way, some of y'all have brought your checkbooks.
By the way, for you young people, when you get home, you can Google what a checkbook is. For those of y'all who have brought your checkbooks, we can take checks right here and now. All right, who on the campaign can take a check? One, two, three, four. All right, we got four people. By the way, I said this a couple weeks ago. In East Texas, three guys at the bar raised their hand. I'll take a check. So don't just give it to someone random. Give it to someone on the campaign. But we can take a check right here and now.
How about cash?
We can't do cash. But we can, as I said, we can take checks and you can do it online. And every penny we raise will go to mobilizing, to informing, to turning out common sense conservatives. Number three, volunteer. Every week we've got thousands of Texans who are knocking on doors, who are making phone calls. It is powerful when you look in the eyes of your neighbor and you say, hey, this election matters. It matters to me. It matters to my kids. Look, what the left is counting on is complacency. The danger is not that a bunch of Texas conservatives wake up suddenly and vote Democrat. I don't think that's going to happen. The danger is that too many of us stay home. So let's prove them wrong. Let's mobilize and turn out. And by the way, the people we need to turn out are not just the folks here. Look, the folks here, y'all are engaged. You're focused. But it's the folks, it's the oil field worker whose job's going great, who's doing really well, who's not watching Fox News each night, but is just happy, but may be busy with work and church and kids and just not focused on it, just might not show up. We got to make sure they do. And you're volunteering. Your voice could do that. And then the fourth thing is vote. Come out and vote and bring your friends, bring your family, bring your neighbors, bring your loved ones, bring your co-workers. Bring everyone to defend freedom. If we stand up and defend freedom, we will keep Texas as the greatest state in the greatest nation in the history of the world. Thank you.